My work has been to try to find the universals of what is it underneath our creeds and our beliefs that we find is our common experience as humans as well as divine beings in some way. And what is it that we can know about that reality? And I'm just so excited about the quest and really unpacking that with people like yourself.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. You know all those stories about someone seeking wisdom and they climb to the top of the mountain and then they find the guru sitting there? Well, he did. Actually, two gurus. This is a story of Doug Abrahams, who, as you'll hear, facilitates a meeting for a whole week of discussions with the Dalai Lama and with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I'm with Heather Bigley, our senior producer.
Hello.
And with one of our student producers, Aaliyah Ebert.
Hey, everyone.
Doug Abrahams is an author and editor. He's a producer. He wrote The Book of Joy, Lasting Happiness in a Changing World, with His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. It inspired a film called Mission Joy, which you can find on various streaming services. But how do you come to a place where you just invite Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama to meet in India for a week of discussions?
And that's how we open this interview, is the discussion of how do you calendar with two world religious leaders.
If I have any chance of going to heaven, it's probably because of this book. And it's been so incredibly rewarding to have had the privilege of sitting for a week with the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, who obviously is no longer with us, but that week was so profound, and the writing of this book and seeing the impact that the book and the film have had on people around the world has been deeply inspiring. Getting the two of them together was quite a challenge, as you can imagine. Getting their two calendars, getting kind of global figures to be together for a week, it had never happened before. It would never happen again. It was just an extraordinary logistical feat, partly because China was putting pressure on South Africa not to let the Dalai Lama go to South Africa. And Archbishop Tutu's prostate cancer had recurred. But then we got the call that Archbishop Tutu was well enough to go, and we were able to get him to Dharamsala, India, in the foothills of the Himalayas, and have this incredible conversation between the two of them. And I will tell you, I felt an enormous amount of responsibility, an enormous amount of pressure, given what a rare opportunity this was for the world to have these two men together in this way and to hear their wisdom. And we knew it was going to be very significant for the world. We had no idea how much it would mean to them. And just, you know, global figures don't have a lot of time to hang out with their buddies. And the whole week, they were just laughing and holding hands and teasing each other like schoolboys. And it was just pure joy from start to finish.
Definitely a life highlight. I have to smile just hearing about that process. I love that you filmed it as well as recorded it for transcription, because I'm sure that just their expressions and their body language added so much. Did you know from the beginning that you were going to structure the Book of Joy kind of by day? Day by day of their conversation, was that thought out?
Yeah, we didn't know that it would be organized by days. I worked with Thupten Jinpa, who is the Dalai Lama's many-year translator, in preparing for the interviews. And we knew where some of the good stories were buried, and we obviously knew what their ideas and values were. So we had a series of questions, and we went out to the world, and we got 1,000 questions. And we distilled those questions down and had this kind of week-long conversation, which I was waiting for kind of Oprah Winfrey to show up or Anderson Cooper to take over. But it ultimately fell to me. And I remembered this thing that Archbishop Tutu had once said to me, which is, sometimes you're the one in the room. And it doesn't matter what your abilities or vulnerabilities or limitations are. You just need to show up and let what wants to happen, happen. And when I surrendered it and let go of what they called my own self-regard and just let the spirit move through me and through us, it was incredibly blissful.
It's really interesting that these two enjoyed each other's company, loved each other, laughed and laughed. these are two people who have been through a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, to be the head of a whole people in exile, in the case of the Dalai Lama, to have lived through South African apartheid and that struggle and the pushback, it seems like maybe their joy could be somehow connected with things they had suffered or come through, but come through in a certain way. What do you think about that?
Well, that's a very insightful comment, because I think that it's very much true that what we wanted to get from them was, how do you have joy in the face of adversity and in the face of opposition, not just joy in some eternal yoga class or when everything is wonderful. And there's a Buddhist saying that it's easy to be spiritually enlightened when your belly is full and everything's going your way. And so we really wanted to understand how these two men, who are just this incredible expression of the human capacity for joy, we're able to maintain that joy in the face of enormous adversity, oppression, exile. What I would say is joy and fun are very different things. And joy comes from this deep, resonant experience, in some ways, of the spirit, really. In the Christian tradition, joy is seen as this quality that comes as a result of the spirit working its way through us. That's the true joy. And joy is obviously many things. It can be the joy of a wonderful meal with a friend, but it can also be spiritual resonance and a kind of deep luminosity that these two men have, which is a way of being in the world. And you do capture so much of that luminosity in their face and their way of being. We didn't know if we were going to make a movie, but Netflix told me it was one of their highest rated films of all time. And I think the reason for that is it's like a masterclass in being human. And I think that's obviously what we tried to put in the book too, was that sense of you're there, you're experiencing this week with these two kind of masters of the human spirit and ways of being. And as you see in the book and in the film, they're kind of like a comedy duo. And it's like the best buddy film ever. You know, these guys, they're just, you really had no idea. When we knew it would be wise, we didn't know it would be so incredibly fun to just watch them engaging with each other and exploring the nature of joy.
So they are both extremely high, if you count hierarchies, each in their own spiritual tradition. They are known for being able to teach and share wisdom in that tradition. And yet they wanted it to be a universal book. They're holding on to something that is their spirituality without belaboring their own tradition.
They didn't want it to be dogmatic. They didn't want it to be ecclesiastical. What it felt like, and I say this as, you know, somebody who is Jewish, you know, was it felt like I'm here with this Christian master and this Buddhist master, and we're sitting at the mountaintop where all the world's religions meet. And we're just hearing what it is at the core of all the world's great traditions that really speaks to the nature of our being human and how we discover that deep joyfulness in the face of opposition and challenge. And just to come back to your first question about joy in the face of adversity, one of the astonishing things in the week together was when Archbishop Tutu, right when we started, turned to the Dalai Lama and he said, "Why are you not morose?" And the Dalai Lama didn't know the word morose, and so it had to be translated for him. And when he heard, "Why are you not sad? Look, you've been turfed out of your country," as Archbishop Tutu said, "there's nothing worse than losing your whole nation and the suffering your people have gone through." And the Dalai Lama said that his exile was actually an opportunity for him. And his ability to reframe that huge cataclysmic adversity into an opportunity to get closer to life and to have more compassion and come out of what he called the gilded cage that he lived in, as he described it, was really astonishing. And actually, I just got back from the Himalayas, where we're doing a new book with the Dalai Lama called How to Think, A Journey to Unleashing the Power of Your Mind. And really what the purpose of that book is, to really go even deeper into this question of what are the mental practices, what are the ways of thinking the mental habits that allow us to see our adversity as an opportunity.
You're meeting in the Dalai Lama's headquarters, or his government in exile, home in exile. You're talking with these two spiritual leaders, and they are discussing joy universally, but it has to be tinged with a spirituality. And you give a description of something unexpected that you felt as you started working with them. Can you talk to me about what that was like for you?
Yeah, I had this very nerve-wracking night before we started the interviews. And I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning as if I had been shaken. And, you know, the Dalai Lama gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning each night to meditate. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning when my demons get me up. And the demon that got me up this night was the demon of self-doubt. And I went out onto the balcony and I looked out at the foothills of the Himalayas that were in front of us in the sky, and I was transported back to the balcony of my childhood. And when I was 7 years old, I was one leg over the balcony of our 20th floor apartment, deciding whether I was going to jump. And it was this incredible moment of the way in which our lives all, you know, make sense to us in retrospect. And suddenly I realized that my entire life from the age of 7 to that balcony in Dharamsala was really a journey to understand how we have joy and reduce suffering in our lives. And the next morning, we started the interviewing. And I had been told, if you look into the Dalai Lama's eyes, he can look into your soul and he can tell you exactly what you need to hear. And I was very skeptical because I am somewhat secular and from New York. So, you know, we were somewhat skeptical to begin with. And so I looked deep into his eyes that first morning as we sat down and our microphones are being adjusted. And he looks at me and I'm expectantly waiting to hear what he's going to tell my soul. And he says, "Button up your shirt, your chest hair is showing," which I guess is what my soul needed to hear. But after we had fastened up the chest hair and all was good and we were on our way, looking into those men's eyes, those two of the most compassionate people on the planet for a week, I did feel this rewiring of my brain. It was like there's a kind of tingling of my mirror neurons were being refashioned in some way. And it was just this incredibly deep experience of witnessing what is possible for us. I think the biggest lesson that I took away from this project was that joy and sorrow, suffering and happiness, these are two sides of the same coin. And the purchase price of life is that coin.
Interesting.
There's no way to just have one without the other.
Did you have any sense in that moment, like maybe you had been prepared and were just the right person? In fact, were the person who had helped make it all happen.
What I realized in retrospect is that I was somebody who had spent a great deal of my life seeking after wisdom and trying to understand the human condition. And I spent a year studying in Jerusalem, and I had been the religion editor at the University of California Press, and I'd done books on Christian traditions and Buddhist books and all the faith traditions. And I had, both from my own seeking, I had been prepared to be someone who could be at the crossroads of these different traditions. And I did it differently, as you know from the book, than a journalist would. A journalist would have been much more about the facts and the stories and their histories in some ways. And this was really what we were there for, was what is the deepest part of these two magnificent traditions of Christianity and Buddhism that can speak to people of any faith or no faith? What is that profound wisdom? And what is it that these two men are living that we can bottle up and give to the world?
You're listening to In Good Faith. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here, host of In Good Faith.
Here's another podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts I hope you'll check out. What I Love is Real. You know that saying, real recognize real? That's Lisa on The Lisa Show. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian. She's a believer, a single mother. And on The Lisa Show podcast, you'll hear from the Council of Moms, a genius idea, which is actually one of my favorite parts of her show. And you'll hear about the challenges of life, parenting, mental health questions, social issues. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but also from people discussing their where the rubber meets the road life experience. It's The Lisa Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith. We're chatting with Doug Abrams about joy and a discussion he facilitated with the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
I spent 20 years with Archbishop Tutu, traveling with him all over the world in various places on it, the various book projects that we did together. And he became such a profound mentor and a surrogate father. So there are lots and lots and lots of stories. Maybe the last story, which is we were meant to go down and show him the film in South Africa. And then COVID happened and he was not vaccinated and there was a surge in COVID in South Africa. And you don't want the karma of killing Archbishop Tutu, you know, so we were like, so we'd say, Father, we can't come see you. And he was very disappointed. And he sent me this email that said, hey, man, I thought I was going to see you in the flesh. And I said, sorry, Father, we want to be there. We can't come, you know, and then he sent me another letter and said, hey, man, I thought I was going to see you in the meat, you know, and, and finally I was like, Father, I'm coming, you know, like, I'm going to go, like, I don't care. And fortunately, he had just been vaccinated. So I was able to say, yes, I'm coming. And I went down and, you know, it was really clear that he was ready to go. And we were able to arrange a kind of Zoom through the television with the Dalai Lama at our final goodbye, which was very beautiful. And I was able to get spiritual counsel from Archbishop Tutu with some anguish in my own life. And I said to him, why do we love each other so much? And he said, well, in our tradition, we don't believe in reincarnation, you know, meaning the Christian tradition. But he said, but maybe we were father and son. And it was just this beautiful, beautiful moment of just recognition beyond the dogmas. Your tradition may say there's a spiritual reality of knowing, and there's magnificent, gorgeous moments in our time in Dharamsala when the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu were joking about who was going to heaven and who was going to hell, you know, and you know, really poking fun at their dogmas. And Dalai Lama was saying, well, maybe since, you know, you're a Christian, you're a believer, you're definitely going to heaven and I can hold on to your coat skirts and you can get me in. And another point he said, well, you know, I've decided I don't want to go to heaven, Dalai Lama said, I want to go to hell. The room became quiet. He said, there are more people I can help there, you know. And then this beautiful, beautiful moment, the Dalai Lama turned to Archbishop Tutu and he said, I think at the moment of my death, I will remember your face. And then he went on to say, in the Buddhist tradition, there's this idea that when you have a deep, deep connection with someone, That connection goes on life after life. As I said, I started as a skeptical New Yorker, but I do think that I have come to see that there are these spiritual realities that are beyond what we know how to measure and what we know how to describe. And I think they are incredibly important for us in our understanding of reality.
Are there particular attitudes or practices that you think you've adopted because of your interaction with these two spiritual masters?
You'll have to ask my wife, but I think I'm a lot better husband. So the eight pillars of joy that they shared with us, they're like almost like a catechism of human development. Four pillars of the mind and four pillars of the heart. And it begins with perspective. When we just focus on the heartache and the heartbreak, whether it's in our own lives or it's in the world around us, that's all we see. But if we step back and get this wider perspective about life, then we can have some hope of having joy in our life, because the heartache and the heartbreak doesn't go away, but it takes its proper perspective. And from perspective, you naturally develop a capacity for humility. That humility comes from seeing ourselves as no better or no worse than anyone else. It's very easy for us to fall into the human status game and to be consumed by our ego. But they felt that humility was a profoundly important for any real lasting sense of joy. And then once we have that humility, then we are able to actually have humor, which is the third pillar of joy, which is the ability to laugh at ourselves and the ability to laugh at life. And it's really the humor that comes from accepting our human foibles and our human shortcomings. And then from humor, we're able to come to acceptance. And that's the fourth pillar of the mind. And acceptance is the ability to accept reality as it is. Acceptance is the only place from which real change can occur. It's not acquiescence. It's not saying we're going to just accept reality and not try to change it. But before we can make any positive change, then we need to accept it. And so those are the four pillars of the mind, and then there are four pillars of the heart.
This is so fascinating to me. It's called the Book of Joy. Have you decided what brings you joy in your life right now?
One of the key things that they really talk about in the Book of Joy is that joy is our relationships with one another. In some ways, we thought we might need to call it the Book of Compassion, because compassion was so fundamental to their understanding of joy. And our loving relationships with one another is really our greatest joy. And I would say my relationships with my beloved wife and my three children and their three partners, so I almost have six children now, and my dear friends and colleagues, that's really what gives me the most joy. I mean, it's not that I don't love a great hot fudge sundae. I do. I think the kind of real joy that is the kind of radiance is my relationships with others.
Do you feel like you've made a connection with the divine or with God?
I have a very firm and deep conviction in God and the divine 4 days a week. And the other 3 days a week, I'm not so sure. So I would say my faith is in the exploration of understanding what the reality is. And it has a deep humility before the evidence. Like, so I've had my own personal experiences of deep connection with the divine, whether that was around the death of my father, whether that has been in nature, whether that has been in religious communities with others. What I'm really interested in is figuring out the facts of our universe and of our own lives. And so my work has been to try to find the universals of what is it underneath our creeds and our beliefs that we find is our common experience as humans, as well as divine beings in some way. And what is it that we can know about that reality? And I'm just so excited about the quest and really unpacking that with people like yourself and others who are trying to understand, get us closer. When we get closer to the divine, we get closer to the truth. Or when we get closer to the truth, we get closer to the divine. But I think the minute I start saying, oh, I know this is the nature of reality, then I think I've forgotten how little I know. I think it was Einstein who said that nothing is a miracle or everything is a miracle. We can get better at seeing the woven patterns that are unfolding in our lives.
You just heard Douglas Abrams talking about finding joy in adversity. And I love what he said about this whole experience and all this learning being kind of a masterclass on being human. And he said that Netflix told him it was the film that was made from this whole week was one of their highest rated films. And I think it just proves that as humans, we do want to find joy. And we're willing to put in the work to learn how and develop those abilities and attitudes. I loved his definition of joy. I'm a person who collects definitions of joy. Mm-hmm. And for me, I base mine on a scripture from the Revelation, which talks about we will feel joy and God will wipe away our tears. And so for me, joy has always been you are fully cognizant of the pain and the sorrow, and you recognize how much God has done for you to bring you to a place of safety and healing. And his definition is feeling the Spirit move through us to accomplish something. I love that. He's saying when our active lives, we can feel the Spirit and we can feel that joy.
Moving through us. And so here are two people, the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu, who have lived through really trying circumstances. One lost their country, one fighting for people in apartheid in South Africa. They've been through some horrific things, and they know about other horrific things. There they sit, laughing with each other, teasing each other, like, oh, the cameras are on, you better be holy.
Yeah.
I mean, they do not take themselves too seriously. They, I think, have felt God working through them with a purpose, but they recognize it's God more than them.
Yeah. It also struck me in their conversation about how to find joy in those trying times that it didn't come down to one particular dogma or faith tradition. It was, he said, at the top of the mountain, it was the core of all of the world's religions. And there's something universal about joy and finding it that can apply to everyone.
So this episode gave us somebody who has interviewed so many people seeking to dig down into not just what their beliefs were, what they were taught, but how they've applied them and had to think through a moral dilemma. And then two world leaders from two different faiths, and they're all talking about spiritual wisdom. And I was fascinated. The whole conversation, I'm speaking as if we had the Dalai Lama right here because Doug Abrams is sharing the story so beautifully. But I just feel taught and I feel happy that spiritual seeking can be so rewarding and energizing. Many thanks to Douglas Abrams for speaking with us. This episode was produced by Leah Ebert. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley and Leah King, Katerina Martinich, Josh Orton, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and Lawrence Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If you love learning from people who have spiritual journeys they have traveled and are in the middle of, be sure you share one of these episodes and be sure and leave a comment or a review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, on Instagram and Facebook, InGoodFaithPodcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here, In Good Faith. Let me tell you about Kaboom, a thrilling audio adventure podcast made for the whole family to enjoy together. Whether it's a teleportation experiment gone wrong or an ancient Viking curse wreaking havoc on the high school football team, Kaboom has an adventure made just for you. With a new adventure every episode, you'll meet magical creatures, explore outer worlds, and maybe learn some valuable life lessons along the way. Subscribe to Kaboom on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.